Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Impulga. This evening we'll talk about the increasing strikes and protests by workers in Africa. And tonight we have my colleague Henok Fente of VOA's Horn Service. Henok, welcome to the show once again.
Well, thank you very much, Douglas.
You're welcome. And we're joining us by our regular panelist, Suleiman Mugura, joining us from Durban, South Africa. He's an independent political analyst. Welcome to the show, Suleiman.
Good evening, Douglas. Thank you very much for inviting me.
You're very much welcome.
Thank you.
Well, as I said, our topic tonight, we're going to talk about strikes in Africa. Since the start of this year, the number of labor strikes by workers in both the private and private sectors has been on the rise across the continent. We're talking of teachers, lecturers who went on strike in Malawi, Kenya, and Swaziland. Also, a public health care sector that serves the majority of Kenyans, 40 million people, was affected by labor strikes recently. And about 2,300 doctors went on a strike over wage disputes and poor working conditions. Well, let's start from there, Henok. Is there a market increase in the strikes by these workers, or maybe they are being covered better? What do you think?
Well, there's always been labor strife in a continent such as Africa, elsewhere in the world as well, because of there is increased capital into the workforce and into the African economy, and which will bring a lot of corporate interests. Now, previously, during the time of the Cold War, you would notice that it's almost half of the continent was ruled by socialists, where people who are actually doing work, factory workers, teachers alike, were unionized and they felt included in the government. Now, coming to this shift where you have inflation hitting most parts of the continent, most of the labor strifes or the questions that teachers, healthcare workers are raising are just basic bread and butter issues. They want to be able to feed their families, they want better working conditions, and their demands are very simple: inflation adjusted wages and salaries. These are the basics of their activism, and they're not talking about ideology. It's just bread and butter. So it all goes down to the lack of inclusive economic and political institutions throughout the continent, and the gap between the rich and the poor in governments that favor the elite, and most of the workers are not benefiting from some of the economic progresses. So it's an economic inclusion issue.
I see. Suleiman, well, as Henok says, there used to be these labor calls for strike and all that in the past. But what seems to have been happening recently is that most of the affected workers are the public sector workers. We're talking about teachers, lecturers, doctors. What does this say to you?
I agree with my colleague, the up there. But also, I would like to say that when you critically look at these strikes, there is something unique about them. The level of resilience, the level of anger, the lack of empathy with the government is a bit unique. I think, to a large extent, there has been a disconnect between the leadership, political leadership, and the strikers. The way my colleague has said, this is unlike the time when we had the socialists in. Now we have got a new dispensation at play, and a new dispensation which is so different in the way they handle public affairs. I'm going to this one because when you look at the lack of empathy in all these strikes, they are not normal strikes. I've never heard of a lecturer who goes on strike for 6 months to the extent of collapsing the institution where he's working. I mean, lecturers in Uganda were on strike for quite a long time. the doctors in Kenya, 3 months people have been dying and they could not move. I mean, the level of resilience shows that there is a total disconnect. The strikers are not angry. They are extremely angry. I think, in my opinion, for us to understand where we are, and for the sake of our brothers who are striking, and for the sake of our listeners to understand the context in which we are operating in, we need to understand that ever since the collapse of the Cold War, as my brother has said, and the coming to face of a fully-fledged capitalism, what we are having on the continent today, the major cause of what is happening, which is across the board, strikes can, let me first observe that these strikes can happen in any country on the continent, save for Botswana, save South Africa to a certain extent, Namibia and Mauritius. Otherwise, the rest of the country can have a worker strike anytime, any day. So it is across the board. But what is happening across the board? In simple terms, what is happening across the board is that the continent is one huge animal farm where we have got two classes of people. We have got a class of other animals, and then we have got a class of the pigs. So long as that situation continues on the continent where we have got a class of the pigs against other animals, we shall continue to have these strikes. I think that is what is at contention. We have got a bigger group of animals trying to hatch out a living versus the pigs who are having heaven on earth for themselves.
That's quite an analogy, Enoch.
Yes, some Orwellian knowledge there coming from Suleiman. Mm. Douglas, I just wanted to add, when I talked about socialism in Africa and then increased labor issues and strifes, I'm not saying this is a byproduct of capitalism. The institutional reforms that should have taken place throughout the continent that could have created the jobs, that could have created the better working conditions, have not been fully developed. And in most cases, political leaders have stopped and actively put blocks, stumbling blocks on the development of these institutions for political gain, which is manifesting itself into economic loss and economic malice of the masses, and that's creating popular discontent. And when people are not happy, they organize, and they organize through traditional institutions, they organize through professional unions. Students also take to the streets, young people take to the streets, demanding for better jobs. So the symptoms are not ideological, and they're not manifesting themselves because of an ideological divide. It's just that some practical political measures that are being taken are not helping improve the lives of people throughout the country.
Yes, but Henok, maybe I'll bring the Suleiman here. Most of these countries where these strikes are taking place, what the extent that a doctor can go on strike for 2, 3, 4 months and let people die, it's and people are not annoyed or angry at the striking workers. They are annoyed at the government. And the primary issue, according to some people, seems to be the way they look at politics or political leaders who are living in luxury and enjoying all the benefits. Where politics in Africa, it has become an industry. You want to get rich, join politics. So, and the people see a doctor earning a tenth of what a politician is earning who does nothing in parliament. I think that's the anger. Maybe, Suleiman, how do you look at it?
I totally agree with you, and I agree with you with my bridge that, by and large, these strikes have been apolitical. We cannot say they have been political. Though, to a large extent, the way you are putting it, the anger is towards a political system which is insensitive, a political system which is predatory. As we are saying, in our animal farm, the most lucrative business on the continent, the most lucrative business on the continent is politics. That cannot be denied. We have got two lives, as we are saying. We have got a class which is living in heaven, and then we have got a class which is in the gutters, and you cannot take it away. Once we have got two classes, the class of pigs that has got the political leadership, those who are in ordinary political leadership, MP, then you have got those who are in government leadership. That is the class of pigs. They are living their own life, and this disparity is so huge, you cannot compare it whatsoever to the ordinary workers. It is just normal. It is just understandable. And it should be automatic that the ordinary work should go on strike because of the two lifestyles which we are leading. If you want to know what it means, if my brother can add on, look at the countries which we are look at the leadership which is leading us on the continent. Okay. In Angola, the daughter of the president is the richest in Africa, the richest woman in Africa. Maybe the father is the richest man among the richest men on the continent. Equatorial Guinea, the vice president, who happens to be the son of the president, is among the richest men in the world. He has got mansions all over the world. He drives the latest cars, and they are spread all over the world. In Ghana, again, within the class, while Mahama fell because of corruption and so on within the political system, the new leader has just appointed 100 ministers.
Yes.
In Kenya, the MPs are among the highly paid people in the country. In Uganda, you have got about 100 ministers, about 450 members of parliament, and then amongst the richest, I'm sure, when you take off the president, I think the second richest is the brother of the president, and then the families that follow. Mm-hmm. This is replicated throughout the continent. So how can you fail to have strikes when you have got a class which lives in its own world, whereas the rest are left to be in the gutters?
Yes, Enoch, the anger, actually, even these workers who are on strike, they seem to be addressing it to the government, to the political class. Do you agree with that?
I mean, there is the class difference. It's mainly based on income and political patronage, who is close to you know the government, the ruling party, and who's not.
Mm.
And that clearly defines who makes money and who doesn't make money.
Mm.
Now, the issue is not also about who is embezzling the country's resources and who is not benefiting from it and is working hard.
Mm.
The problem with such manifestations is this. Aside from the money that they're taking, such practices make it impossible for young entrepreneurs, businesses to thrive because the corruption does not only come in a form of embezzlement. It's also taking resources that could have better been allocated to other segments of society or other activities that stimulates the economy. The issue is when you have the elite having a complete control over your economy, they will try to make sure that their business interests are kept. So you will not see disruptive creative technology like we see here in the US. You know, when digital cameras came, Kodak basically had to go out of the film business.
Yeah.
Such disruptive technologies are being stopped by political leaders who are providing patronage to an existing elite establishment. Now, this stops creation of jobs, better opportunities, less jobs, and the government becomes the provider of everything,
yes,
including businesses, including doctors and nurses, whoever wants to prosper in the country, in the continent, anywhere in the country, has to work with the ruling party. And that was the issue in Ethiopia. Recently, we've had protests that lasted for more than 10 months before the government decreed a state of emergency and forcefully stopped the protests. Actually, the parliament today voted to extend the state of emergency for another 4 months.
Yes.
Now, when you see what was going on and what led up to these protests, Ethiopia, like many African countries, has a very young population. You know, close to 70% of the population is under 35. Mm. And the country, even though the country is growing at double digit for the past decade, that economic progress has not trickled down to the population. And that economic progress also was not the kind of economic progress that the private sector played a critical role. These are public sector investments in infrastructure, public sector ownership of businesses, including import-export businesses. And these are jobs and money and opportunities and loans that are being given to the elite, while the rest of the population, coming up, striving to make their lives better, were left out to dry. So that really started with the student movement, students graduating from colleges. They have no job perspective, so they went out to the streets. So these are the manifestations. And you know, the one point that I would like to hammer is, when you have non-inclusive institutions and politicians are stopping the progress in terms of building them, it's not about a class, who's rich, who's poor. It becomes a question of resource competition, and some people just don't have access to it.
For those who are just joining us, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from VOA studios here in Washington. Tonight, we are discussing strikes and protests in Africa. Our panelists are Henok Fente of VOA's Horn Service, and Suleiman Mgula, a South African-based independent political analyst. And I'm your host, Douglas Impoga, here in Studio 9. Now, gentlemen, you mentioned Henok there just before I reintroduced the program for our listeners to know what's going on, about how the government is now at the center of things. But there are those who point out that maybe I'll put as a question, to what extent do you think the liberalization policies, the structural adjustment programs of the late 80s and early 90s had an effect on this? Because to some analysts, those programs destroyed the cushion where there was free healthcare in every hospital. Now it's difficult to get drugs in hospitals. Where education was free everywhere, now they talk of PUPE, but again, there are issues with that one. Housing, where government employees were housed, doctors were housed by the government, and therefore that was a problem solved. Now they have to figure out where to rent housing. So these kind of things, to what extent were these programs a factor in today's situation?
Well, I mean, there's this increased blame on the structural adjustment program. Basically, it's a Washington consensus being pushed by IMF and the World Bank was. And, you know, a lot of African leaders have proclaimed that it didn't work for them. But honestly, the concept of it, the practicality of it is different. We need structural reforms. We still do.
Yes, but what type of reforms is the question?
Exactly. What type of reforms? Now, those kinds of structural reforms, we're talking about different institutions. Who provides loans for businesses? How is the marketplace organized? These are very important issues that affect the lives of people on day-to-day basis. When you have politicians putting cadres and people who don't even understand their roles in a place such as, you know, there's a number of initiatives for young people. I mean, I'll go back to the Oromia region and parts of Ethiopia. The government, through the assistance of the international community, provides financing for young entrepreneurs. Most of that is being given to young people to buy their political support in elections, to gain their support in lobbying people, and making sure that everything is organized under a political structure. That kind of reform, it doesn't matter whether it comes from Washington or Addis Ababa or anywhere, it's not going to work.
What do you think, Suleiman?
The way my brother said, the crux of the matter, as he said, is the hurdles which is put by the politicians who are supposed to provide opportunities for the ordinary people. Every attempt to make a living is being stifled, either through policies or deliberately. The system, the corruption system, does not allow Africans to progress as of now, because politics is a business. A lot is invested, as my brother is saying. Everything is done to perpetuate someone in a particular position. Once he has got that position, it means his children and family are assured of a civil service job. It means if he does not get a civil service job, if he is to go in business, is assured of a tender. All procurement is due toward him. If not is that one, he is going to sit on a board. So you find that there is exclusion for the majority of the people, while the minority are in control of all the resources in the country. So what we are having is a pure marginalization of the majority of the people, and the minority have taken over and made it so difficult to enter into the territory of a good life in this on this continent.
I see. Another point, Henok, that some analysts raise is the issue of corruption and lack of or priorities that are upside down. It's not for lack of resources that African governments can't meet some of these development goals, because they have the money. Each African head of state flies in a presidential jet. They are good at spending money, but spending it on the wrong things. Recently, I read, where Kenya was trying to buy some armaments to defend against nuclear weapons, and somebody's cracked a joke defending against nuclear weapons from Somalia or what. So it's the money is there, but it's being misplaced. Lack of priorities are not in order. What do you think?
Well, I mean, corruption, we've talked about corruption, but it's in essence a conversation about the role of government. What is the role of government, what are the roles of civil servants who are in charge of administration? I think the role of government is to facilitate trade, open trade, to facilitate citizens' prosperity, at the same time making sure that peace and security are kept. So these facilitation actually helps. There is no country in the world that was developed by just a government or civil society or NGOs. It is private capital, private money that sustains economic growth. And the government's job is to creating a marketplace that nurtures such ideas, that promotes entrepreneurs, businesses that come up with new ways of doing things, and providing the financing scheme if that is the role that a government should play in a marketplace such as Ethiopia, Eritrea. I could talk about most Horn of Africa countries where the banking sector and the financial sector is also under strong government control. So let go a little bit of control, facilitate, and then promote business, and that's the way to go.
Yes, except Suleiman, what Henok here proposes, or that's the ideal. What seems to be happening on most of the continent is that the leaders seem to think that the country's economy is they treat as their personal property. They determine who the winners and the losers. They determine which project goes ahead and who is supposed to get the contract. therefore there is no level playing field, and in that situation there can't be room for innovation. What do you think?
Douglas, when you think about the situation in Africa, you even wonder whether there is leadership at all, whether the current crop of leaders whom we have, the continent, even understand what leadership is all about. Because as my brother said, to run an economy, you need to have demand and supply. You need to have an economy where there is consumption, where there is demand. Now, how do you run an economy when in Cameroon you have got over 20,000 teachers not paid for almost 4 years, for 4 months? If there is no money in circulation, how are you going to encourage business the way my brother is saying? How are you going to encourage entrepreneurship? Because there is no demand, there is no consumption. The element of consumption is a basic economic principle. I mean, how do you run an economy? How do you expect to grow an economy when you are paying a lecturer who is supposed to be among the top consumers? When you are paying him peanuts and you are paying only one person, a member of parliament, 10 times his salary, will the member of parliament be the one to go and buy all the bread on the market? So they themselves kill the economies themselves, which they are supposed to run. The workers don't demand this money for the sake of demanding. But if you want economic growth, you have to create consumption. And you can only create consumption when you pay people a living wage, when they have got disposable expenditure. Mm-hmm. If they have got disposable income, this is when they can be able to buy. This is when you can have factories grow, because they will grow when their consumers consume the goods. Mm-hmm. But when you go in these countries, you find that the middle class, which is supposed to purchase, is only scraping from hand to mouth.
I see.
They don't even have disposable income. So how will the economies grow? Even all these figures which they are giving us of economic growth and so on, they are all fake. Mm-hmm. Because once people are poor, when they don't have this economy, there is no economy which you have.
I see.
So I don't believe even that we have leadership on the continent. There is a collapsed leadership. We need a new generation of leaders who understand economics.
See, last word, Enoch, in 30 seconds.
We have very few countries that are doing well in the continent in terms. But that aside, I think the strikes will continue. Just to give you a very quick example, recently the government increased the salary for Ethiopian civil servants. Inflation went up 7.8%. So what happens is, when you don't control your finances and you're just printing money and circulating it in the marketplace, of course inflation will compensate, will take most parts of the wage increases. So strikes will continue.
We seem to be stuck with these strikes for some time to come, as you say. Well, we're out of time for now, and I'd like to thank our panel, Henok Fente of VOA's Horn Service, and Suleiman Mugula, South African based independent political analyst. Gentlemen, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, our producer was Jackson Mvunganya. Our engineer tonight was Dan Crofton. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that you can hear our roundtable on the internet. You just go to our main website, click on Reporters Roundtable, and it will be there for you. You can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@vonews.com. Thanks very much for tuning again. And until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Impoga, in Washington, wishing you all the best.